Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Welcome back, everybody, to an earlier-than-usual edition of Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Gert Weinzierl, and I am joined, as I always should be, by Mr. Kyle Ferguson, coming to you from his living room, because Kristen usually streams at this time, so she has the green screen. Squatters' rights!
Yes, we're recording a little early this week, but that also means we're hot on the heels of the trailer, the teaser, which means we get to be hilariously wrong today, though actually there's quite a bit in it.
In the teaser?
Yeah.
Is there really? I mean, by the way, we've already got the name of the episode. Just typing in it right there. Okay, you can all see in post when this episode posts. Are we just diving right into it, man? I mean, it's just a damn picture of the Dark Portal.
No, but there is a dude. There is a dude in the dude. Dark Portal, or, you know, female, whatever. It is a humanoid figure. It is not a Pit Lord, sadly. Okay. It is probably not, what was his name? Kazak?
Yeah, you're right. But you know what else? But you know what you're wrong about? We need a bumper first.
We're on, boys! Ha-ha! Let's liven up this place!
Can't stitches play now! Point me to the stage!
The bumper has spoken. We're now allowed to talk about Heroes of the Storm news. Okay, yeah. Perfect. So we got our new hero teaser. It is an illustration of the Dark Portal, specifically the Azerothian side of the Dark Portal, because, first of all, there's a size disparity, but there's also a giant freaking dragon sculpture on top of the Outland one.
Right, because the Draenor side is bigger? Okay, first of all, can you give me a quick rundown of, is this the portal to Draenor or the portal to the past Draenor? Do they look the same?
We went through the exact same portal, so that I cannot tell you.
Okay, so we all went through, and for some reason we were at a high enough level, and the portal said, hi, people, go this way.
The way they did it in the game, if you're that curious about mechanics, was you took a quest to go to Old World Draenor. And that was, if you just go right now in World of Warcraft and just walk through the freaking portal, it'll still take you to Outland like it always has.
But if you have the quest,
you go to Draenor, so on and so forth.
So this in no way is a Warlords of Draenor character, then. This is 100% an Outland character.
Well, I mean, arguments could be made, man. Arguments could be made, because the Dark Portal is where orcs came from back in the day. Like the original orcs came through, so there could still be characters that if you played WoW, you only saw in Warlords of Draenor, but in the overarching story of Warcraft, would still make sense to tease a hero with, even if we're not talking Warlords of Draenor.
Do we need to make a big deal about the green eyes? Is that fell? Is it required? I feel like with how they've messed with us in the past, I don't want to read into the green too much.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. So if you're watching the video, we just put up a close up of the Dark Portal illustration that they shared, and you can see some fog in the center and the green glow. And then there's a noticeable silhouette that is extremely humanoid. And I would also say surprisingly un-orcish. It's not hunched over enough to really be an orc. And it has green glowing eyes. So
it does appear to be Kil'jaeden-y when you really look at that. A little short, I would think, coming through the portal.
Extremely short, and Kil'jaeden has a pretty prominent, you know, head crest, I would say. Your Eredar / Draenei bulk, you know, rock heads. They have that, you know, and he also has horns. He has very prominent horns coming off of his head. And I don't see any horns in this silhouette.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, very, very toned down silhouette. It could be Maiev if they sort of cut out the helmet and all. If this is 100% silhouette and this size, we might be looking at a comma or something weird like that. If this is the Outland Portal, though, how exciting and how horrible would it be if it is Garrosh, but actually he's a multi-class hero. He starts as wimpy Garrosh and over levels becomes the horrible Garrosh of war crimes fame.
That would be very interesting if they went that route. Yeah, to me, it looks like a bald character, which just puts it in orc territory for me. I don't know why this particular orc is has such good posture, but... Yeah, my money would be on Garrosh if I'm going off of this silhouette. It looks like Garrosh. He's got a nice freshly bicked head. Even though his eyes don't glow green, I would say the green eyes are a red herring.
I think so too, but I'm gonna go with Eridar. I think it's one of the kill Jaden about that time. He's been dancing around for a bit. They got Gul'dan out. I think it was on their minds.
Oh yeah, well. I don't know, man. I don't know. If it's an Eridar, I feel like you could tell from that silhouette.
He's a bit tiny.
To me, it looks like Garrosh with no pauldrons on, which we have seen before. And I believe the Warlords of Draenor cinematic. I think he was rocking the no pauldrons there.
We'd be pretty confused if they gave us a silhouette of Gul'dan, the Gul'dan we got for Heroes as well, I think. The back spikes do kind of make it clearer, but I don't know. If I saw that thing all hunched over that wide, particularly after seeing cutscene Gul'dan in recent World of Warcraft,
yeah,
I'd probably go with like some sort of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Not Spider-Man, but what are they called? Arachne?
The Nerubians?
The Nerubians, I love them.
The Nerubians, yeah, that would be Ice Crown though. I don't think they'd be showing us the Dark Portal.
It's exiting from the Dark Portal on its way to the next expansion. They're just messing with us.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Honestly, before I even noticed that there was a kind of a silhouette standing in the twisting nether opening of the portal, I thought that yes, I'm sure we'll get a new hero, but I was thinking, well, what if this is a Warcraft event? We still don't have any Warcraft battlegrounds.
That's true. We are looking at the 24th being the end of Suns Out, Guns Out. So it would be time for something new, perhaps.
Yeah, that being said, I think we're still, with how long it sounds like it takes them to develop battlegrounds, I think we're still way too close to Hanamura, and Hanamura still needs a lot of work.
I think so, particularly with the air that Hanamura had, that this was a big deal. Here it comes, new map. This seems a little hero teaser. It's just kind of light. What do you guys think? Get the fandom rolling. I'm super excited about it.
Mm.
I, this is my favorite kind of teaser, the ones that are just nebulous, but aren't as tricky.
Yeah. I'm sitting here just thinking, man. Just thinking, what could it be? Anyways, I'm glad that we got to be wrong. I'm actually happy we recorded early for once, because being wrong is fun.
It is. It's fun to take a blind guess. They're really quick about these. They don't like to leave us sitting for full weeks. We'll know probably tomorrow, if not Friday. Let's talk Heroes. Let's talk about the actual game, because it's evolved a lot since we last met. Funnily enough, we're recording early, and things are changing. Malfiel fell down to 51%. That's not insane, but his fall, as always, gives rise to a number of people who were kept down by Malfiel, or those who combo well with the people Malfiel kept down.
Or players who didn't get the memo that Malfiel's not insane like he was at launch, and they're just blind picking him when he makes it through drafts, and maybe they're not as good as they should be with this hero.
It's interesting to see how much his power has fallen and how perhaps poorly those Malfiel players were actually performing outside of Tempest, or was it Tormented Soul? The name makes no sense to me in my head. Last Rite still makes no sense. Reaper's Scythe, I know that's a Zul ability, but come on, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Speaking of, can we just dive into Zul? Zul's everywhere.
Yeah, let's talk about him.
Zul is everywhere right now. And man, people have just taken to him like crazy. I've been playing him and frequently topping both damage and siege damage. It's kind of nasty. He's getting first bans now in my games, which...
Oh.
What?
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so the obvious reason why Zul would become a first ban is because he brings enough lane clear, push power to win the game. Also, with Zul's double soak ability, lockdown, things of that, you don't have to have that much additional lockdown or lane clear, which just means you're already kind of getting close to winning. Usually you have enough damage nowadays because people want to do assassins for carry's sake because they want to climb. Oh, stitches, too. Oh, my God. I had some great Zul games, ranked games, too, this week with a stitches on my team as Zul and able to follow him up.
What do you like so much about the stitches? Just following up with a bone prison?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
You move them to you, and even if they do have some sort of mobility, the bone prison now closer to you locks on where they originally probably would have bolted away through their gate along those lines.
Yeah, I've been he's now my like go-to quick match hero. I know I've mentioned on the show for the last few weeks that he's already been kind of my go-to. Like when I want to relax, I go to quick match. I go skeleton build. But after his new change, I'm having a very good time just ruining Stealthy's days. The second they show themselves, it's like, and bone prison on you, you die.
It's great. I have fallen in love with the Scythe build. I always loved running away and tracking that Scythe behind me, but getting two of those, it's also taken off as the highest win rate build that there is, at least when you're looking at his level 13 talents. Along the way there, you're a little free to take what you want, but Curse Strike talents are underperforming because you have to be in melee. If you get pushed back, they don't work. And as we talked about last episode, Zul's lane clear is perfectly fine without investing a single talent into another Curse Strike.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you talk about real quick what makes the double Scythe talent good? Because it weirded me out for the longest time. I still don't think I'm using it to the best of its ability, but I think I have made the breakthrough that the sizable delay from the other two showing up is actually a good thing rather than a bad thing, because it gives you time to readjust yourself to what you're trying to hit.
Right. We may be looking at a talent that's very surprising to enemy players. Echoes of Death, level 13. Spectral Scythe, you put out your first one, and along the side of them spawns two additional scythes after 1.5 seconds that deal 75% damage. Great damage amount, so I'm not concerned about that. You get out your initial scythe. People tend to dodge that one. But the other two come from the side and sort of make a triangle as they sandwich down on you. And they're very likely to hit, particularly the thing that you're currently in melee with. The main reason why, for me, Echoes of Death became a better pick than something like Rapid Harvest is Rapid Harvest does help me burn through merc camps really fast. And you can now solo at 13 something like a Bruiser's Camp on Zul, something you could never do before. However, you're still a melee hero. When you do Echoes of Death on that same mercenary camp and you've completed your level 4 Reaper's Toll for a decreased cooldown, you're looking at about the same time. And now you've added poke to a character and actually like a follow-up to in your team fight. That is really important. Imagine you run in with Curse Strikes, you get blinded, boom, contribution's done. You run with a normal scythe, you're now on 8-second cooldown there, 15 seconds there. You are padding out your team fight by adding another two scythes in at a 1.5 second interval afterward.
All right. And a follow-up question. So now we understand why Echoes of Death is good. Playing off of your comment saying that it surprises players. How much of the Zul rework and his success in the last week since the July 11th patch, how much is it he's just good, and how much is it we just don't know how to play against it, on top of, you know, between the two additional sites that you now have to worry about, the damage coming in from bone prison because of skeleton focus, and then having to deal with a rather sizable burst damage amount coming from a level 1 talent on your bone armor?
It's probably a lot of it surprise. I wonder if something as simple as Backlash, dealing 15% maximum health in that area, is just crushing random tanks who deal damage to the Zul because he's in range and things fall apart there. Will they learn with time? It's tough to say, right? Think of the Tyrael situation. You're in a fight. Tyrael's out of position because he dove too deep. Logic would say, don't kill the Tyrael. He becomes a bomb. But at the same time, you just kill him and then you win because there's no more tank on the other side, even though the bomb did damage.
Right.
So I'm not sure right now which it is. But yeah. Zul is surprising a lot of players. And same thing with any player that comes out. If it has decent lane clear, it's going to perform pretty well.
Okay. Yeah. So what else has been rising? Uther has seen a rise. Rag is coming back. He's really high up there, actually, right now. And Rexxar, of all heroes.
Right. Rexxar is probably the most confusing one. I'm expecting that this is a result of Malfeel going out, because, of course, that was two characters for him to burn on. But also, he was entirely countered by Genji in the past. And now Genji's fallen down to about 49%. Still gets plenty of first picks. Still very powerful character, but most people aren't diving for him without the skills necessary to back it up anymore. The Butcher story is definitely the mad money of the week. It's a very interesting one. Butcher has risen up for a number of reasons. First of all, he's a decent Zagara counter. We talked about Zagara a little bit last week, but Zagara, Illidan have become this global force with Garden Terror and Warhead Junction coming out at about the same time. Same with the Dragonshire. So all these sort of comboed together to make Zagara rise. Illidan rose because he combos so well, and Malfeel was going down. So the Butcher rises because of Stukov now and Zagara. He's a great last pick. His popularity is suggesting that Butcher is currently, in most smart scenarios, maybe not those ones you're mad about in Gold League or whatnot, but he's being picked as a last pick. We can read that from the popularity. And this would be a great pick to counter a team that doesn't have enough stuns to stop the Butcher. But hold up, there's also this thing called Uther at the moment. And who wants to stun anything more than a Butcher? So you put an Uther with your Butcher, and you give him Garden of Ancient Kings. Now he's got 50 armor. Everyone stuns him. Everyone's going to stun stack the Butcher, no less. So it's a very powerful combo. You run a Divine Shield with that too. Now you're just cooking a great breakfast.
Yep. And I'm glad you brought up Zagara, because you know who isn't stunning the Butcher? Zagara. And you know who probably doesn't have
CC there.
And you know who probably doesn't have friends backing her up? Zagara. Because she's going to be off in a lane.
Same thing's happening with Rag right now. Also, Butcher has a over 60% win rate versus Stukov. You can imagine being unstoppable and all that, charging through his lurking arm. You get right to Stukov, no problem. Once you're locked on to Stukov, there's a likelihood that you're going to succeed in killing him.
So you're saying with there's a correlation between the rise of Butcher and the rise of split pushing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because
the exact same thing is happening with Illidan and Zagara.
All right. Okay.
Because of this, things are going to be a little confusing out there right now, because the information and stats on Hotslog suggest that Butcher is an excellent pick on Warhead Junction. He is, because of all the isolated lanes. But you gotta already know how to play Butcher. If you are a new Butcher, you're probably best on something like doing a double soak on Blackheart's base, so you can actually focus in, complete your meet, and then join the team fights. I feel like Warhead Junction, with its really wide, distant lanes and big areas in between, lead to a lot of dead Butchers and a lot of Butchers who wait for ganks too much and don't actually complete their meat quest.
Yeah, he's. I mean, we both talk frequently about multiple heroes that you can play where lessons learned on one applies to multiple heroes across the game. Is there anyone where playing Butcher will help you learn also how to play them? I don't think there is. He has a very unique kit in that regard.
Yeah. I would say any character that teaches you patience. I think characters like Zeratul and Nova teach the wrong sort of stealth, maybe even Valyra to an extent. But Valyra you should be using to, in most scenarios, outside of just crushing quick match and finding people by themselves, normally Valyra engages out of stealth, runs in, and this is non-professional, of course, and then pops into stealth for the moment to use that ability in conjunction with other abilities. So that gets you on the right path. I feel like Samuro, with his limited time in Windwalk, teaches you the patience and sort of lane clear thought process you'll need to be a successful Butcher. And anyone else that would also give you that patience too. Genji is not a bad one, because you're sort of focusing on your deflect stacks as you climb up to 20. However, most people think Genji is this ham machine, when actually you're really eyeing your cooldowns.
Yeah, No, I like that. I really like the correlation you drew between Butcher and Stealthies of like, hey, just because you're not stealth doesn't mean like it, you should still be practicing knowing when to engage. And it, I think a good engage for Butcher is usually the same good engage for a stealth character.
Some of the other things that happened this week are Leoric's climb on Warhead Junction. Never really thought about this before. More of an interesting side note, but if Leoric dies on Warhead Junction, he's kind of global. He's already out on the field. It takes a long time to walk back out.
I never thought of it that way. Not to mention, landing drain hopes in small areas that people are fighting around always are easier. So if everyone's clogged,
people wanna interrupt your objective, you're draining them, they have to walk towards you to interrupt, you're going to have a good time.
Yep.
Also, D.Va fell rather dramatically this past week, down to 47%, because they fixed a defense matrix bug, which was allowing her to reduce percent-based damage.
Oh.
So now D.Va's been fixed up. She's falling a little rapidly. You can also expect, though, that D.Va is pretty darn countered, as we talked about last week, by Stukov. Also, Hammer. Hammer's having a rough time out there due to Stukov. She is falling quite a bit. In fact, when Stukov was first released, it seems, there was a bug. Unsieging is a spell, so you couldn't unsiege while silenced.
Oh, you're right. That actually makes sense, but clearly not intended, right? Like,
right, it's not a spell. It's like she throws a lever, maybe, right? It's a mechanic.
Well, yeah, I wasn't even going that far. I was just saying that's clearly not their intention to basically guarantee your death by sieging up against the Stukov.
My logic would suggest that Illidan could not do a front flip because he can't cast a spell.
We're talking game mechanics trumping roleplay here.
So they did fix that. However, if you are a Hammer out there, you should be aware that you still can't use your Z. One of the, I think, easiest ways to manage getting away while you're currently sieged.
That, I think, is fair. Because, again,
because it's the easier version, it's on a different cooldown, and there really isn't any problem with you moving in and out of siege anyway, cooldown-wise.
Yeah. So, what others? So, I'm assuming that extends to other unique Z heroes, right? I'm assuming Brightwing can't teleport.
Mm-hmm.
If she's standing in the silent zone, I'm assuming Falstad can't use flight.
That is my understanding as well.
Okay, yeah. As long as it's consistent across unique Z abilities, that's fine with me. It makes sense in my head. Sieging and unsieging, though, come on. That's a little... I see why they fixed that. It's a little absurd.
Yeah.
A little absurd. So, anything else? I mean, how have your games been overall, man? Has anything changed drastically for you?
It has. I fell down to Diamond 5, which means I started seeing plats again. Which means, once again, I gained the confidence to just ignore the draft and pick exactly what I wanted. And this always happens to me. I get into that Diamond 3 range, Diamond 2, and I just get trustful. I start thinking, that's cute. Ooh, Diamond 2 Vala. I bet she'd like a Zarya. I love playing Zarya. Ooh, a Greymane. They're a Diamond 2 Greymane. Let's give that a Tyrael. I always do that to myself. And then I see the plats on my screen and I go, oh, serious time. And right now I am nothing but Nazebo, Tychus, and Zagara. A lot of Zagara. A little bit of Zul here and there when I lose Zagara. But I think Zagara is very powerful on any map where a global will be useful. Great on Hanamura too. Zul Jin does come out based on the types of healers I have. But you can kind of tell my plan here. It's murder. It is murder o'clock. And the meta really supports me right now because it's a support. I love these metas. I love tanks. I love fresh tanks. I love fresh supports because now people aren't first picking Malfiel and now we have to build like a Malfiel comp and people don't want X anymore. When someone first picks Stukov or a tank, people are pretty darn open to anything. And something's happened. They forgot about Tychus. I don't know what's going on there. I'm schooling people. Again, they're platinum, so they're not the people I'm used to fighting here. But he's got a 45% win rate, and nobody cares. Genji has a 49% win rate. Nobody cares. But you take something a little off, like Gazlo, who has a 53% win rate right now. How weird is that? And people lose their minds, right? Mm-hmm. So people are cool with Tychus. they forgot about the nerfs of February, and everything's great, man. I'm carrying out there, and it feels good, and I just have to keep in my soul, lock it in, that I can't be seduced when I get higher league again. I have to keep the murder machine rolling.
So you got to stop being cute, is what you're saying.
I have to be untrustful again. I just get hopeful, man. I see that diamond three, and I start, you know, thinking it's Masters territory, and let's make some cool comps happen. But in all reality, what people really need right now is something that's right behind the tanks, murdering everybody. And if you can do something cute, make sure it's very map specific, like Zagara, Warhead Junction, or Nazebo, Spider Queen, Zul'jin, Hanamura, like any of these sort of things that you just know exactly why you're taking on that map. But otherwise, pick something that's right behind the tanks, because they will not stop fighting. It's core comps is a concept that I teach a lot. And it is basically that you must have enough damage to complete whatever the heck you're doing, because otherwise it is useless. So if you are a tank dueling one tank, that's not going to go anywhere. If you're a bruiser dealing tank, okay, bruiser might win. If you are a tank and a support fighting a tank and support, again, nowhere. A tank and support with an assassin, tank and support, guess which side wins, right? You just make sure there's damage in range when you make an engage. Unless you're doing an engage that you are two levels up for, and then people are going to catch up because you're a Nubrek and you're going to cocoon the main damage. You get it.
Right. So that's what's happening with you right now, or just these endless team fights?
Endless team fights. And they're great for Zagara because I can participate in the team fight, realize that it's going sour, and then just bail for bottom lane and take a keep. Like, that's really powerful, decisive play. Beyond that, I'm just finding that making sure I'm following these tanks that are making these engages is the most important thing I can do.
Mm. Yeah, I've been taking Zagara into Hero League again. Now that I've trained up on Zagara a little bit, and it's weird, man. I'm liking it a lot. I've done my homework and kind of taught myself how to play Nidus, how to swap around to the best of my ability. But this is kind of similar to what you're doing. Like a similar issue, I guess, is just this anxiety I'm feeling watching the rest of my team kind of make engagements that I feel like they shouldn't be, and I feel like I need to be up there, especially if you get into the scenario where they will have that endless team fight, but the second you go push a Zagara, the other team will rotate to come kill you. It just makes me sweat, man. It feels like playing a really hard Abathur game all the time.
Yeah, it's very StarCrafty, and I like that a lot about it. The scary thing about Zagara, and in fact, I don't think enough streamers are playing her yet, because I haven't really received many, you know, missed lethals with Zagara, but that is a pile of optimization. Like, there's some cute stuff you can do with other characters, like Tyka's overkill is great for clearing lanes and optimize your build and use your talents. But when it comes to Zagara and you are global after 10 and you can participate in everything, everything feels like a mistake at times. Oop, I missed some creep there. If only I had a Nidus up there. Crud, I should have attacked for 3 more seconds because it would have reset my Nidus. Instead, I'm stuck sitting inside the Nidus for 15 seconds. And it feels like a huge momentum kill. Banelings missing. Like, did those count? I don't know. My mana's infinite inside the Nidus. So these Banelings I'm throwing out that miss don't feel. But if they did hit, there's just so much room for me to get really, really good at this character. And I'm hoping that we can maintain this meta for a little bit so I can actually get those skills under my belt.
All right, I'm glad I'm not alone then in my Zerg sweat that I've been experiencing. which by the way, to our patrons out there, I know I mentioned a Zagara coaching video. Haven't posted it yet. I had some issues with the VOD. I should have it up before I leave for the week. By the way, I won't be here next week. It'll be Jeff and Kyle. So, but it should be up before I head out. So, patrons, keep an eye on that. Kyle kind of put me through the ringer on how to play Nidus, which was basically you talking nonstop because I could always be somewhere else.
Yep.
The second
it's
you
very
got,
busy.
The second you get to where you're supposed to be, you're supposed to be somewhere else.
If you want the most basic version of it, if anything ever reaches a wall and no one is in range to soak it, you have done horrible wrong on your global Zagara.
Yes.
And I will leave that at that baseline. Actually, I should mention, too, I just started a new video series on my YouTube. It's called Trading Wheels, and it goes over really basic concepts in about a 5-minute video that pertain to certain characters and how that'll teach you a greater skill set for the rest of the game.
Rad, man. Rad.
Yeah.
Well, let's shift
about
gears.
Time.
Let's shift gears and have a chat about what's going on with all of the chatter around Diamond 3, because there has been a lot of conversation within the last week about this, and Liz Travis and other developers over on the Heroes team have been getting rather vocal and joining in on this conversation. The long and short of it is that they are considering some changes for the Diamond 3 placement cap, including removing it almost entirely. And then also, I found the more interesting thing in here was just the overall talk about the MMR system. I always like, you know, when they talk openly about their thoughts on that. And basically them coming out and saying, we are not going to skew a player's MMR based on games played. That is just straight up bad. It's going to lead to a bad system. Them kind of, you know, making the statement that somebody with 200 games played can absolutely be at the same skill level of somebody with thousands of games played, depending on their gaming history. So they're not going to ever skew MMR based on games played. Instead, they are putting their focus on improving the accuracy of your MMR as it is.
They once again brought up, too, that they're looking at various ways that the system can take account of skill, but they need to make sure, once again, that these are not exploitable. Funny that they're talking about Diamond 3 specifically here. It's certainly been decently documented on this show, my trials with the mode. But as I mentioned earlier, whenever this happens, I always go down, realize it's my fault, get the confidence for murder, and move back up. If people are dead, you're winning the game. Mercenaries are a cute way, but you know, can you 1v1?
Yeah, at the end of the day, 5v4 trumps mercenaries.
Right, exactly. So Diamond 3 is a mess. It's funny that we do this to ourselves, though, because we'll have, you know, and you try to give the most basic version of whatever the information is. So people ask, hey, how can I climb out of bronze? How can I climb out of silver? And of course, us folk in Diamond 3 will classically give you the get good, just kill everybody. Why aren't you good enough? And then we go on Reddit and have these long-winded conversations about how our mode is broken, but we, you know, lured from on top. It's a very distressing thing, I'm sure, for the lower leagues to hear about.
No, I completely agree. But so where do you fall on it? Do you see the Diamond 3 bit as an issue? Because the message coming out from the Heroes team, it seemed odd and double-sided, because they kind of start, like, Bliss Travis started off saying we haven't seen any major issues, but then also saying that they are considering getting rid of the Diamond 3 being the highest possible placement you can achieve.
Right, we did receive some new information in this that I didn't know about anyway, that if you do the classic Smurf thing where you go level up your characters in AI, only ever hit quick match when you know you're going to win with some super main that you're playing, and then take it into Hero League when you're all leveled up, ready to go, your MMR is set to Plat 3, and a winning spree can carry you up to Diamond 3 from there.
Okay, I did not know that either.
So that's good. So that means the people who do this at least have to win to get there. We've been under this assumption that you can just sort of do whatever you want as that silver player now on your Smurf.
Were you? I was not. I still felt like you probably needed to win a bit. Otherwise, you're just going to end up in a low rank.
Helps out, certainly.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't seem like a mind-blowing revelation to me, but the specifics of it certainly are. I didn't know like Plat 3 was the highest you could hope for going from quick match into doing your placements.
They also said that they're thinking about, which I think is a great idea, particularly for those grandmasters and pro players. Grandmaster won't activate until 2 weeks into a new season, so that you don't have these marathoners who climb themselves into grandmaster and then sort of camp out on their points, being unwilling to play to keep their spot.
So it would just, it's time gated, basically. So just master would be the highest thing available for the first 2 weeks of any given season.
Exactly. And then we'd make a pretty big deal about it. Here comes the grandmasters and throw the switch. The top 200 are there.
That's all. That also gives us just a storyline and a date to for streamers at that level to rally around and be like, okay, it's GM day. Let's start that climb.
Yeah, like the, you know, the classic drama list, and the teacher posts it, and everyone sees what role they got.
Yeah, I'm. That's again. This doesn't affect me, and probably never will. But it sounds cool to me.
It. Ultimately, in the end, it's disappointment by the community and by people like me, too, that say this is Diamond 3. Shouldn't it be better? Shouldn't the players be better? Shouldn't we be doing HGC comps? These are, you know, your top 10%. Shouldn't it look a bit more sexy?
Yeah. But my question, though, around this is it sounds like a lot of people are asking that question that you just said. This is Diamond 3. Shouldn't it be better? But they're asking it now. What, 4 weeks now into the season? People have been able to move around now at this point. Now, Diamond 3 means less, doesn't it? I mean, I get that if you're going in the first week of a new season and you're seeing shenanigans in Diamond 3, but right now, isn't it realistic to expect that some people have either climbed their way there or plateaued there or whatever?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was a particularly rough season for a lot of people. I think we had a lot of returning people. We had a lot of excitement in the summer, which brought in perhaps players who also hadn't played in a while. It was just an odd start. So now we're sort of thinking about that. I feel like things have settled down a little bit. But then again, I exited the chaos realm there. This Diamond 4-3-2 sort of area. Now I'm back in it. I'll report next week. It'll probably be back to frustrations.
All right. Fair enough. So, anything else from this before we move on?
That's about it. Excited to see what they can do. Seeding is all kinds of messy, but what they really need to do, in my opinion, is make people play unranked somehow before they do ranked. Because if you were to introduce me to this game and said, get level 5 on 14 heroes, and I said, cool, done. I feel pretty good. I'm still playing this game after all. So clearly I've won to some amount to feel the dopamine levels and feel rewarded here. If you can get me an unranked, which is basically the exact same version, just meta doesn't reign supreme, I can get some drafting practice. But I know me, and if I saw the button that said, would you like to play for nothing at all or points, I'd say, well, heck, this is my day. This is my half hour. Let's do it for points.
Yeah, I understand that that mentality. So, shifting gears again, but still staying in the realm of devs getting chatty. Matt V talked about stealth design. It was in response to some questions about Valera, and Matt V said that, you know, he couldn't speak to Valera specifically, but then ended up talking about stealth in general, saying that one of the biggest challenges with stealth heroes is that their strength is inversely proportional to the enemy team's level of coordination, that they live and die by whether they can get picks or on unprotected or out of position targets, saying that pretty much this is the essence of the, quote, pub stomp hero who's a weak and competitive problem. And it's not an easy thing to solve with just number changes, but they do want to solve it. He said that the first step is going to be figuring out a solution that preserves the bulk of what's fun about stealth heroes, while simultaneously mitigating some of their disproportionate strength in less coordinated matches, especially when it comes to quick match. He said that they trust us. We have ideas. They're just not ready to talk about them yet.
And it's important to note, too, that this was a response to a guy saying, Valera is my favorite character in the world. Please help her out. I don't want people saying I am the less viable version of Zeratul. So this came from a happy place, but it did spark the discussion as to what is stealth? Is it a good design? And if it's not working competitive, clearly there's some sort of issue with it.
Do you think it's just too easy to just deathball, just stay grouped up, and it's a hard, and you just kind of render a fifth of the opposing team useless?
Right. That, and it's always been the Zerg problem too. If you can out coordinate, out maneuver your enemy, they weren't that good in the first place. But if you build a deathball and move it in, it's got no weaknesses. How'd you counter that in the first place? Well, you didn't let the Death Ball get that many levels in the first place. You didn't let them farm those early kills during the rotations when you messed up. But then you had to sit through a 15-minute game that you were losing anyway because of perhaps a stealthy that can't actually close the distance to make something happen. We also have a lot of noise going on right now. And this started, I think, to me with Johanna, but there's just a lot of stuff. And there's auras flying and spells that clear the entire maps, like Taranda Owl. There's just a lot of things for poor stealthies to be concerned about. And then you give that a melee, and it's going to become even a bigger issue.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, because right, like when they Death Ball in a comp without a stealthy, you could probably just send someone to go split push and try and gain value elsewhere and have your four stack try and get some value. But when there's a stealthy, most stealthies are not good at wave clear. And so even if you do send who is good at wave clear on your comp to go clear a wave, now you're essentially a 3v5 because your stealth member is still kind of out in the cold if the Death Ball is truly impenetrable.
Exactly. Now, so I don't need stealthies. I'm about 50-50 on them. Whenever I see a Nova, it's going to be amazing or it's not going to work at all, but that's kind of how Hero League goes at the moment, so no problem there.
Yeah,
I kind of like having a Nova on my team. I think it gives scouting, merc ability, burst, lots of stuff.
Yeah, Nova, I've really cooled on. And I'm definitely still in the camp of all Nova player. Nova is binary. They're either amazing or the thing that ruined your game, it seems like. But Nova, of all the stealthies, I think actually kind of breaks that concern of the Death Ball because of the fact that she is not a melee stealth, that even if they are Death Balling, if that Nova is really solid with their skill shots, they can still do work.
You also have that Orbital Strike, which if they're all grouped up is going to be highly effective.
Oh, yeah.
You've got the Hollow Decoy to confuse people. Here's what where my thought process kind of is with stealthies. My thought on how to fix them is give them the stealth at 10. And all of a sudden we have this player base of stealthies who play the video game because they have to help soak. They're not invisible from the start. They'd be there. They'd be in that middle fight helping out because they'd have no other choice.
The largest monkey wrench I can throw at your face right now. How do you design Valera? Half of her abilities are no longer available.
Right. How do you do Sammy, who's got his on his kid as well? And it's a rather important part of the character. I don't know. It's weird for me to think that stealthies should just be thrown out of the game because of StarCraft. If a Dark Templar got inside my worker line, game over. And I had to accept that. And I had to scout and I had to look to make sure that stealthies weren't being produced on the enemy side. Same thing with roaches, which both those characters had different reveals, either a tiny little shimmer moving across the ground or a bit of dust as the roaches burrowed under into my base. To me, seeing the shimmer is a skill, and I'm happy to have that counter. I think of Riki from Dota 2. He got stealth at 10. The way you countered Riki, who was permanent stealth, even no shimmer at all, was to make sure you kept him down the entire game, kind of like you do with Convection, Kael'thas, or Butcher. So adding the stealth at 10 to me means there's some sort of counterplay available in the early game so that you don't start that I got picked snowball and your worst player loses the game for you because they didn't soak safely enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in the boat with this Valera player. Valera is one of my favorite heroes to play. I would very much like to take her into Hero League, but I'm not gonna. Out of the few times I've had a chance to do it in Team League with you, that's the only time I kind of trust the pick on a hero that I very much enjoy.
Yeah, the other option in my mind is to take it and make it a CC bot, which isn't a great choice because people want to World of Warcraft rogue blow someone up, and that's an important part of that fantasy.
What if we just give all stealthies really solid wave clear?
But and don't fix anything else, that'd make them amazing. That'd be horrifying.
Well, then when they're just getting hard countered by the other team, just refusing to group up, they're the ones to leave and go split push.
I mean, that's not a horrible idea on paper, right? That's how you make them viable in a lot of new scenarios.
I realize it's terrifying in practice. And honestly, Samoro and Zeratul aren't terrible at wave clear as it is.
It's a very odd scenario because I know a lot of people who say, just remove them from the game. I will pay money. In fact, I've heard for Blizzard monthly, I would give a subscription for them to remove Stealthies from the game. This particular player said, so I can play Chromie. So it was a little twisted in that way. But people don't like them. And people have suggested things such as they are untargetable instead of stealth. You just simply can't click on them to help with that eyesight. I do wonder if it's like an over 40 issue, perhaps. You know that sound, that high-pitched squeal that they say only people over 40 can hear or can't hear?
You're saying people can't see the shimmer because of their age?
Maybe, right?
That's the most insane thing I've ever heard.
It could be. I don't know. If that sound thing works, maybe the shimmer is a little bit much.
No, it's not. You just got to be looking for it. I think if you have sight issues, it's probably hard to see, but I don't think it's necessarily correlated with age so much.
And it may just be video game experience, right, in those older players. They just didn't grow up and weren't able to put in the high school, middle school, college time necessary to master that particular eyeball for it.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if our recent Stealthies, like Valera and Samuro, caused this issue with some of our players. And they just, their eyes don't activate because of the unrevealable period. Because if one of those characters stealth, your eyes immediately start tracking about 10 feet out, like you would with a Tassadar who disappears. You're not going to just stand there going, he will reappear at my feet. No, you're going to run a little bit. You're going to try to take a guess where he's going to be at the end of that. And I think unrevealable might just be causing people to just give up.
Maybe, but that's not my problem. Get better at looking for the shimmer. It's like I don't have any sympathy for if that's truly what someone is putting out in the universe is a reason why. And no, I don't think anyone actually would admit that that was the reason. They're just like, I just give up. It's too hard. I don't think that's insane to me.
There's nothing wrong with that, though. And I know a lot of players in Silver and Bronze who say, you know, I don't really want to know that much. I don't want to get that good. I play this for fun. I'd like to be gold. That's my goal. And in that way, they sort of limit their knowledge base or their practice.
Well, herein lies the overall issue with Stealthies. We've just come full circle back to the problem in the first place, which is quick match players want them to be worse. Hero League players want them to be better. I fall in the latter category. Or Caragordy, if you're playing Kerrigan, who's not as stealthy, and it doesn't work as a play on words for what we're talking about.
It's no fun being locked out of the game, and even characters like Illidan can go take a mercenary camp, solo soak with immolation and that sort of thing. So I understand their plight 100%.
Yeah, they're overly specialized compared to every other hero in this game. So, anyways, I don't know. Those are our thoughts. Clearly, we don't have the answer. So I feel bad for Team One because clearly this is an extremely unique challenge to try and overcome.
Right. We've been down the road of Tassadar being the anti-stealth too, and it didn't work. No one wanted to pick a hero like that for a single job.
Yeah, it kind of works now, though, that his damage is solid.
Right. You pick Tassadar for other reasons, but bonus, if you're countering any sort of stealth, is his cooldown too long in the early game? There you go. Like, the stealth problem continues because stealths win the early game and then win the late game because of that. Once you get all your sweet Adun's wisdoms and mental acuities online, you're already past level 10.
Yep. Well, anyways, let's before we move into emails, which will wrap up this episode, let's thank our patrons supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN. That is where you can go find listener. If you're listening to this, getting value from it. I'm not sure how you got value out of that last thing because we have no answers whatsoever. But hopefully you found it entertaining. And if you would like to support the show as a result, check out the Patreon. This episode, thank you to Darren D. I'm reading this because I doubt this is their actual name. Dill Pickler. That's fantastic. Hal D, JF, Brett K, Spencer, no last name given, John B, and Chris S. Thank you all so very much for supporting Into the Nexus. And it's still awesome, man. Patreon's still climbing. We don't even have like a new fresh goal that we're aiming towards. It's amazing. Thank you all very much for the support. It is.
And it's important to note that this episode is recording early, which means tomorrow will be the no-show after show. If you're not familiar with this, there's a pre-show, there's an after show. If there's no show in the middle, Chris and I get together and make a big old four-hour stream where we'll be doing some themed comps with plenty of clothes on.
All the clothes on. You may actually have a heat stroke.
Instead of summer, otherwise we totally do like tundra theme as a sort of joke back, but no, it's a callback. In this house.
Reverse pornography. Just keep putting more clothes on.
Exactly. Load it up.
It'll be wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. All right. Well, let's move into emails and wrap this up. You can send your emails to itncast@gmail.com. Here's a bumper.
Darkness stopped calling.
Does anyone else hear that buzzing?
Hold on. Darkness just texted me.
We have a bit of a theme to our emails today. They are new player focused. Kicking it off is Graham, who writes in and says, "Hello there from the UK. I began playing Heroes at 2.0 thanks to the crossover with Overwatch and have continued to enjoy this, my first foray into the MOBA genre. The serious question I have is about Hero League. As I said, this is my first MOBA and the whole team picking concept is new to me. I've picked up bits and pieces from hearing your discussions on the show, but I'm sure many others would appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to run through the basics. Second question, completely different, is Butcher and what the F? I've been playing several heroes and lately been having fun with Kerrigan, but no matter what, I find the Butcher spoils my day. I hear that charge start, and I know no matter how hard I try, I will die. Hit him? He heals at a ridiculous rate. Run from him? He'll kill me a couple of seconds slower. Use some movement shenanigans? That might work, but it takes far greater skill to implement than it takes for Butcher to wipe me from full health to nil. Do you guys have any advice on how to cope with this melee monster, or do I just suck it up and hope he's not in my next quick match?" All right, let's start with,
I love it.
Let's start with drafting
part two, because it sets the tone for the entire conversation.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Let's start. But we know what level we're working with here.
Yeah. Do you want to start with Butcher then, and then move into drafting?
Let's talk drafting first, because that is his first main part, and this is something that we can, you know, get a little jargony about and just blaze through as though everyone's on the same level. So welcome to the game, and here's some nice beginner draft notes.
Yeah, so Kyle, I had some thoughts and I jotted them down mostly so you could see them ahead and prepare to tell me how I'm wrong if you think I'm wrong. But I kind of compartmentalized drafting, if you're new to the game, in first pick, middle picks, and last pick, and wherever you fall in that, you should probably adjust your brain a little bit. Do you think that's a healthy way to approach drafting?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And everyone yelling at your screens at home, we're leaving out as much information as possible. We're trying to keep this simple. Not worried about bans right now. We're not worried about what the other team's picking, any of that stuff. Right. So if you are first pick and you are new to the game, cool. Just lock in what you're good at. Just do it. Grab what you can actually play. Grab what you are going to bring the most value to the team with.
Absolutely. Make sure you can play it. Don't succumb to the suggestions in the chat. Help if you don't play certain heroes that people are suggesting, that ban goes out to those things. But ultimately, yeah, play something you're good at. You're the Genji, the Malfeel, Ragnow, Gazlo perhaps, Uther. Those aren't things that you're just going to whip out for fun.
Yep. All right. Now, your homework. As you start doing your homework, as you start getting better at this game, as you become a seasoned Heroes player, that first pick no longer becomes comfort territory, although it might. You might have some crossover, and that's great if you do. But you should be taking a strong meta pick, because it takes that pick away from the enemy team. It is a ban in its own right, only instead of it just not being in the game, you get to control the powerful hero that the other team probably would have drafted had it been left on the table.
Exactly.
So, all right, there we go. Into the mid picks. Again, if you're new, and I'm just going to keep coming back to this, grab what you're good at and hope the final couple picks fill holes in the comp. But because this is the mid picks, depending on where you fall in the pick, you might not get to pick exactly what you want. So because of this, this is where you need to start making sure you can play more than maybe two heroes.
Certainly. Make sure you got a good tank, bruiser, a healer in there. But ultimately, you've probably already come around to one main role and be ready to sort of spider web off from that. Show your first pick. This is what you want. It's the map. Exactly what you want. And then from there, you can sort of weave your way around. Note to those who are just getting going in this game, there are those meta picks that can spider well. If I were to, for instance, show my Tychus first, that is an excellent way for people then to check my name, see that I have played the most games as Tychus, and find a lot of comfort in that. If I first show Vala, everybody plays Vala. You're going to have some competition for that Vala. And so you can do a little bit of mind games there. Show something generally good, and then when you move on to something else that you're also good at, people will be more likely to accept it. So Nazebo, great, gets taken. Kael'thas. This guy isn't just some random Kael'thas who you're going, oh, not another one of these. He went in a logical way from lane clear to lane clear, and you get the sense that he's good already.
Makes sense. Now, what about last pick here, Kyle? I think this is the most problematic if you're a new player, because there's a very good chance you are just going to get forced into filling.
Right. Last pick should be, as we said it during the last Patreon Bonanza, which was fantastic. Last week, we ended up going 3-0 with our patrons and team league.
And then our only loss was against patrons.
Right. Exactly. We have some really good fans.
Yep. It was good.
You should try to leaf in the wind this. You should try to be able to look at the enemy comp and see what they're missing and what sort of thing you can plug in here. Granted, in lower leagues, your final picks will probably be the Last of Us, the tanks, the support, because no one else wanted to get it. But if you are the final pick, this is a really, really important moment and a great way for you to carry. So once again, build your web. Think about it like that. My favorite right now is to do auto attackers. So I have Tychus. I've got Zul'jin being the two I really want to take, but Vala and Cassia. Each one of those has their own weakness. If I see a lot of blinds on the enemy team, heck no, am I going Zul'jin. Everything from him, for me and my build, comes from auto attacks. So let's go Vala, because Vala has great level one ability damage. If I see, and now we're getting a little heady here, that their blinds like Artanis and things like that won't really come online until after 10, I can still go Tychus now because I can, after 10, augment myself to be more ability damage. Cassia, if the enemy team is nothing but auto attackers, and you can start to build this web for yourself. And that is what you're going for in the end. But as Gary said across this entire thing, for now, 100%, stick to what you are good at. Don't be seduced by the people. And if you are suggesting in a draft environment, suggest a role, not a character. Never say, this would be a good Johanna, because some guy's going to go, you know what? Yeah, he's going to be a horrible Johanna. Say we need an anti-auto tank, and he might go, oh, I know some cool Arthas talents. Now you've got nuance, you're more likely to win.
Very much so. All right. Now to the specific ranty question. Butcher, what the F, Kyle? What the F with Butcher?
This is a fun question because it very much says, I'm Kerrigan, look at all my sweet styles. Butcher gets to point and click me. I am frustrated.
Yeah. So again, I looked at this and I had some answers immediately in my head. One, play him. It sounds like you haven't played Butcher. Go and play a game as Butcher. Go and play three games as Butcher. Even if it's against AI, figure out how his kit works. Figure out where the holes are. Try and play at least one game against real people and see how difficult it can be to get a proper engage as Butcher. As actually, to tie it back into what we talked about earlier, getting a kill as Butcher is very similar to getting a kill as any of the stealth heroes currently in Heroes of the Storm, maybe Nova excluded. It's actually rather difficult. You're making a call. You are making a commitment as Butcher when you run in. Especially if you're a new Butcher, because you're not going to know that you can cancel that damn charge and you're going to die. By the way, you can cancel the charge. If it looks like it's going to go bad, please cancel the charge, please. Thank you.
Important note.
Yeah. But go play him. Two, it sounds like our listener here, Kyle, is out of position.
Yes. And probably alone in lane. So if I were in a top lane all by myself and the most obvious Butcher gank all by himself makes his way up to my lane, What would I do? Well, first of all, I was watching the mini map, so I run behind my wall. Butcher can't do anything. Okay, let's remove that scenario. Let's say that he is feet away and I suddenly realize that he's about to charge me. The best thing on Kerrigan that I could do is, one, try to land my impaling blades right before I get stunned, so the delay on it pops as the butcher hits me and he's no longer unstoppable, causing him to be stunned. The next thing I could do is advance forward or out of range of the lane, so I have enemy minions nearby that I can leap to after I do this particular move. So, beat, lay my impaling blades, they stun Butcher, I leap to the nearby lane, giving me distance, and start walking away as fast as possible, the only next thing that Kerrigan can do. That's pretty darn fancy, I think. Takes a lot of forethought.
Yeah, it all comes down to impaling blades for the most part. You could probably even alt and hit your key for impaling blades to have it automatically drop at your feet, because I think what most players are going to do naturally as a reflex is walk backwards. So you alt Q into your impaling blades, it automatically drops a circle at your feet. You're already walking backwards at a reflex, and it's probably going to land right where the butcher's going to hit you.
For sure. This has been something we've all seen with Stukov now, silencing somebody, and that character just keeps walking forward. And you're going, where are you going? Clearly, they were trying to forward click some ability.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the problem here is that it takes finesse to escape a butcher as Kerrigan. Other heroes, you mentioned, quote unquote, in your words, movement shenanigans. Some heroes, their movement shenanigans to escape a butcher are extremely easy. Vaulting is Vala. It's a single button in the direction you want to go.
You can also phase yourself out. So a Dahaka Burho, a Tracer Recall, will remove that ability from the butcher as attached to you.
Yeah. So all of those things. But the big thing I really think you should do is go and play Butcher, because you will quickly find out what ruins a butcher's day. And you'll find out how to not give him a scenario that makes his day.
Likely, too, along the way, you'll discover respect for other players and other people's shoes and so on.
No, screw that. This is not a hippy-dippy thing at all. You are playing other heroes with one thing in mind, to learn how to crush those heroes' souls.
I don't know about you, man, but I always get into those games and go, oh, it was harder than I thought it was. Darn it. Okay, I've gained respect. Shoot. I just wanted to assume it was OP and trash.
It naturally happens, yes. But if you are like me and you prefer to be sinister in your motivation, think of it as you're finding how to surgically murder the opposition.
Also, you'll learn that 15-second cooldown on Ruthless Onslaught can be very much played around. If you feel like he's charging you all the time, you're probably going to take a look at something like level 4 talents, Unrelenting Pursuit. All of these sort of cooldown change things are what really make characters surprise kill you. It's why most Stukovs are victorious right now. In fact, I've seen some really cool Stukov builds this week. My favorites involving all sorts of bizarre things like targeted excision.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, now you're making me want to dive back into this. The other thing is, let's butcher in team fights. If you see the butcher's brand go out and it's not on you, go to town. Because he's not going to be able to heal off of you like he does when he ganks you. It's not he uses an ability when he does that. If you're not familiar with this kit, he doesn't just have this insane passive on auto attack healing. He hits somebody with a brand, a butcher's brand, a mark, and it has a noticeable cooldown on it. So if you're in a team fight scenario and you see that kind of X chain cracked lava looking thing come up over somebody, you now know that ability is A, not on you, and B, now on cooldown, you can engage him.
No less that it actually refreshes itself whenever Butcher auto-attacks the target with the mark on them. So just sort of powering through his healing is not an option. You drop your biz and run. Exactly why, instead of suggesting something along the, just time it out and lay your impaling blades and then kill him. No, we are still very much about running until that butcher's brand is gone, and then you can re-engage. 14-second cooldown there, 15 seconds on charge. He's going to be stuck for a bit once you get rid of his initial engage business.
Right. Again, if it's not on you, though, it's not as scary. Although, if whoever it is on is standing and fighting, it's still a dangerous place to be.
And you can help out. Any character can help out. In fact, if you're Lili against Butcher, not only should you blind him when he makes a connect to so that you're actually causing missed attacks during the prime moments when Butcher would want to hit them, a Butcher's Brand target, but force your body in there, like physically. If there's a Butcher's Brand on Kerrigan and I was Lili, I would actually force my little panda butt in between the two of them and create a body block.
Yep. Ruin his day by hugging. It's fantastic.
That's what pandas do.
All right. Good luck with that, by the way. Grayman tweeted us. I want to know how this is going for you and if you had any revelations while playing as the Butcher. Anthony is our next emailer. Writes in and says, I'm fairly new to Heroes of the Storm, only really getting into it when 2.0 was released. Since then, I played a ton of quick match, getting a small pool of my favorite heroes to quite high levels. After listening to your podcast for a bit, I've been feeling an itch to try out rank mode, but there are a couple of questions which I'd like to ask before jumping in. First is hero selection. I love specialists. Sylvanas was the hero that got me addicted, and they are pretty much all I play in quick match. From listening in, though, I realized that I probably do need a slightly wider selection of heroes just in case. What role should I be able to fill, and if possible, recommend some heroes that a dirty specialist lover like me might like in those roles? He said that I'm pretty confident with Sylvanas, Nazebo, Hammer, and Zagara, and less confident but have some practice with Falstad and Arthas if that helps. Falstad and Arthas. Yeah, that's okay. You're broadening your horizons from the other things listed here. He said the other question is much more general. What's the best advice you could give for people just dipping their toes in the rank? Cheers and keep up the awesome work.
So this is a pretty cool question. So he's looking for to fill out his role, but his mains are almost all specialists. So my number one thought here is that you're going to feel a great pull to abandon your team and go do something soak-worthy or merc-heavy. And taking any sort of support will probably make you go, why isn't the bottom being soaked? Fine, I'll go do it. And then the support is stuck in the bottom lane for the entire game. And you're going, why is everyone yelling at me? They wouldn't come soak this lane in the first place. So I would suggest a Aurel here to get you going. It's a pretty complex hero.
Wait, no, hit the brake. I'm pulling, if this is teacher, student, driver, I'm hitting the brake on the passenger side, Kyle. Don't you think, sir, that what you are suggesting is reinforcing a bad habit by saying, you're going to go not heal the team and soak bottom anyway. Let's give you a support that makes that kind of an okay decision because of her wave clear.
Exact opposite, actually, but you are right to bring up Aurel having decent lane clear and how he could be seduced into lane clearing for extended period of time. I'm talking about these tanks, these assassins who don't want to ever stop fighting. You may be in a mindset that you should never stop pushing. Being Aurel means that you really don't have a job if no one else is around, and I think it'll put you in the right healer mindset to get going. Playing the easy supports like even Lili can make people think they're assassins and they never learn to actually play the support side of it.
I like that. Aurel is, I don't know, that's funny. It's not funny. It's cool that you immediately jump to Aurel, because Aurel is always pretty far at the bottom of my list for someone newer to the game, just because of having to depend on your trait target to be your battery and give you energy to heal.
And if you were to get an Aurel for the first time, I would say keep it simple, manage your hat, and use Ray of Heaven. Don't worry about Sacred Sweeps. Certainly don't go for awesome detainment strikes. Just take Resurrect, because Aegis is a great decision-making tool that you'll want eventually. Just keep things simple, be around the team, and figure that out. But he also says that he plays some Zagara, and we're assuming this might be a modern Zagara, so it's got Nidus on it, and a Falstad, so Brightwing is good. We just have to make sure that you are constantly thinking globally and that when you get left alone in the lane, you're just soaking until the moment that healing is required somewhere else. I see a lot of new player Brightwings get into this habit of, I'm a 1v1er, you call for me when I'm needed, which is the exact opposite of anything I'm thinking about my Brightwing at the time. You are a guardian angel that I do not expect ever to arrive, but thank goodness you did show when you did.
Okay. You sold me, sir. You've sold me on your the lines that you're drawing, and I love like, oh, you're playing a specialist. You're probably moving around the map a lot. Let's give you a global hero. And now you're still moving around the map, albeit for different reasons, but you've probably already trained yourself to look at the mini map.
Right. So let's do that homework in that order. Let's do Ariel first to learn to stay with the team. Brightwing next to take advantage of your global skills. And I would say there's a good connection between the way Sylvanas uses her dagger and the way Stukov uses his healing. And if you're willing to put in what is going to be a lot of work to figure out the nuances and what combination of what your bio kill switching, you could become a really good Stukov because of that.
Hmm. All right. Warrior time to Haka. I don't like him, yes. But it sounds like you will.
Yeah. Global. Soak it out. Brightwing's going to teach you how to play Dahaka pretty decently. Of course, his melee here is going to be more difficult. Good choice. And you've already got the aura thing with Arthas, too, now.
I dig it. And yeah, just keep playing Arthas. He's a great pick into auto attackers, but he can also just be an all-around solid tank if you just need one and it happens to be a tank you're good at.
The cool thing here, too, is that with Naz, Hammer, even early game Zagara, Sylvanas, Falstad, all the characters he's currently playing, we don't need to be concerned about his mobility. Going into something like ETC even, that isn't going to do some sort of crazy escape, still will feel pretty good because his base positioning will be on point.
Yeah. And by the way, keep picking Sylvanas, Nasebo, and Zagara. They're very solid heroes right now.
Right.
Hammer, I can't speak to that. I don't play Hammer. I can't tell you the last time I've seen Hammer drafted. Possibly for reasons like we mentioned earlier, because of Stukov, Hammer stock is way down and a few other issues. But you might be able to see a matchup and think to yourself, oh, yeah, I've been here before as Hammer. I'm going to wreck.
Feel your league. I'm not sure. He, of course, is looking to go into Hero League, so we don't know where he's MMR seeding from. I find Hammer comps are delightfully easy. They're great. They're basically just get pushes, get Morales, get Zarya, just make everything easy for Hammer, and she'll give us a carry. Do people in gold draft like that? I don't know.
Who knows? But good luck dipping your toe in there. Did we have any just general advice for dipping your toes in the ranked? I mean, I think we kind of went over it with Graham earlier when it comes to kind of the draft picks.
Yeah, it is people management, so definitely spend some time in unranked. Learn what upsets people, even though they'll be picking Murkies and Tyrael's tank for that. They will still let you know when something is awry. Use your judgment. You know, they can throw fits. I'm always kind of using this dog training analogy, right? Just don't take anything they say seriously, but it is feedback. And you should digest it and deal with it what you will. Hmm. In fact, recently I just watched another How to Train Dogs documentary. I'm looking to get a dog next year. And this was really interesting because it was about confirmation and how fast you have to be to get a dog to know they did something right. If you say, good boy, but it's already been about 5 seconds, they may have looked at the light bulb back at the food and then farted. And now they're going, was the fart the thing? Was it the light bulb? Which good boy thing did you do here? And I've actually become concerned recently as sort of a slow typer that my thumbs up emojis and my nice jobs sometimes linger too long. In fact, some dudes sometimes squeeze in a salty argument before I get my little carrot in. And now I look like I'm agreeing with something salty.
This is so much deeper down the rabbit hole than I wanted to go. But I love, Kyle, that you are trying to apply dog training tips to the masses on the internet.
So far, they've worked.
Now, all I can think of is the Dog Whisperer episode of South Park. And with that, let's move on to our third and final email for today. Xander writes in and says, I have been watching competitive heroes for a long time now. I love it, especially the new format for HGC they have set up. The midseason brawl was by far one of the best events I have seen. I like it almost as much as the Super Bowl, and I am a huge football fan. Anyway, recently, I have noticed the meta picks have seen more than normal this second half of the season. It started to get a tad boring watching the same 15 plus heroes picked every match. I know this won't happen, but I wish there was a way to make all the heroes relevant. I would love to see more diverse matchups in HGC. Crazy idea, What if they took a page from the new Overwatch arcade? What if in a best of five, you couldn't pick a hero that you won with? So if it was like Fnatic versus Dignitas and Fnatic won, they couldn't play the heroes that they won with for the rest of that series. That would definitely make it more interesting. What are your thoughts on the whole situation? That'd be really fun for a show match, broken as all get out for anything else.
That is true.
You're just leaving too many... I mean, if we achieved Xander's perfect world where all heroes were strong and equal and whatnot, that there's an argument for that as a competitive format. But we don't live in that world, and there are heroes that are just straight up stronger than others. So if you couldn't pick specific heroes because you won with them and the other team could, they could just stack all of the best heroes in the game, and you just have this kind of back and forth pendulum.
Right, but this is like a reverse draft, right? This is a for fun mode that Overwatch did.
I don't really play Overwatch anymore, so I don't know the exact rules. But it sounds like it's a best of series, and if you win with a hero, you can't play that hero again.
And I assume it's on victory, because they can change heroes all the time. You'd be out of heroes pretty quick.
Right. Right. So
let's address the main part here, which is disappointment that there aren't enough. There isn't enough variety in the heroes we're seeing in the professional scene, which is to 100% to be expected. Do what works. But we are seeing greater diversity as our teams last longer throughout the year. With teams constantly building and falling apart, I think things get very meta very quick because we just don't know what's on the other side. But we are starting to see targeted bans. Certain players bring out things like Medivh that they're really good at. And Stitches, I think, really speaks to how settled things might be starting to be. Stitches isn't insane. He isn't OP, but gosh, is he seeing a lot of play right now, and it looks really good.
Yeah, I agree. And this is something that happens in Hearthstone all the time as well. We start to get excited about one or two cards in a deck that are not the norm, instead of the deck as a whole, because things can get figured out and things tend to get stale. And I think the same thing's going to happen in Heroes. It is happening in Heroes, and it's going to happen in other esports as well. I mean, the good thing about Heroes is that if you look at a larger section of time, new heroes being added and the balance updates are going to forcibly shift things around on top of, as you already mentioned, Kyle, these kind of niche, depending on how you like to pronounce it, picks, things like Medivh, things like Stitches, and so on.
How do they fix it? You balance for competitive, which isn't the right answer. So we just have to give it time. And I think as the scene matures, we will see more strategies. Every time an update comes out, though, it'll restrict old strategies. It'll change them. And people will become scared, superstitious, religious, however you want to call it, and go back to things they know worked in previous engagements. So sometimes it's just about gaining confidence. And, you know, we see this too. We'll see a pick of something weird. And I'm at home certainly going, come on, Murky, you can do it. Because if he wins that one game, suddenly Murky stock goes skyrocketing. Also, these people are online too. So if you have a choice between the meta pick or, you know, a meta tank or Chen, and you mess up your Chen, guess what kind of tweets that individual is going to see tonight? And guess what the Reddit posts are going to be like tonight? So they're feeling the pressure as well.
Yeah.
But if you die on Arthas 13 times, people go, the enemy drafted better. And nobody says it's Arthas's fault.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I've never really seen it as an issue because I feel it changes enough over a range of time. It's not like all year we're staring at the exact same compositions all the time. And especially with the midseason brawl, we were seeing metas from different corners of the globe clash against one another, which was, I think, part of the reason that international tournaments and Heroes of the Storm are so exciting to watch.
Agreed. And it's always fun to see a particular team have their all global comps, and these will develop more as players get to play more with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't know. Take ETC as an example, because he was huge. Now he's not so much, but you still see him from time to time. If we had like a whole year of ETC as first pick, first ban material, yeah, I'm going to be complaining about it. But so far that
and we do the same with Murky or whatever you think is the hero you would love to see most viable in there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a Cho'Gall meta? It'd just be horrible.
The ground at BlizzCon would crack from the stomping and cheering if a Cho'Gall got picked.
It did get used this past weekend, actually, in Tomb of the Spider Queen. And then that same day, I had to fight it in Team League, and we lost.
Yep, of course. I've been probably three times a week, I will see a 3-4 stack Cho'Gall squad come through in quick match. I don't know when this started. For me, it was about a month ago, and it drives me crazy, because they always have... There's always an extra person that synergizes with Cho'Gall beautifully.
And there's lots of options. Sometimes you can, well, either way, you're rolling with the Cho'Gall and the Aureal in most cases. From there, you just need some lane clear and something that can off tank, possibly peel. But nowadays, you can run an Illidan. I think the most restrictive and dangerous one I fought was Probius, Arthas, Cho'Gall, Aureal. There was no way to get in that zone.
Yeah, that's gross. Yeah, the last Cho'Gall group I went up against, I was on Stukov, and my buddies were on Tyrande and Chromie. It did not go well.
Oof.
Yeah, it was nasty. Land Chromie shots for days. That Cho'Gall ain't dying. So, anyways, thank you everyone for your emails. Again, keep them coming. Send them to itncast@gmail.com. I'm sure Kyle and Jeff will pull some next week, so keep sending them in. That's going to wrap it up for this early edition of Into the Nexus. Thank you again to our patrons for supporting us at patreon.com/ITN. Huge thanks to our producers, Declan H., Cheesy Bob, and Mythdoll. Extra super special thanks again to our patrons out there updating your payment methods after we had that chunk of changed payment methods that were causing declines and whatnot. Really appreciate everybody. Pick up your Into the Nexus t-shirt over at shirts.amove.tv. Typically, we are live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be again next week over at twitch.tv/amovetv or on alphageekmedia.com. Follow the show on Twitter @ITNcast. And big thanks to Gorath for our intro music and BrianGriffithMusic.com for our outro. Kyle, you're doing a lot of other hero stuff. Where can folks find it?
This week, I will talk about my YouTube, youtube.com/Kyle Ferguson. Now, I do feel like I committed some sort of YouTube sin. I normally upload hour and a half long videos. I posted a 5-minute long video, and I think everybody's a bit confused. But maybe I'll have two accounts in the future to avoid this. Either way, you should check out Training Wheels Genji over on my YouTube. Did it with John Jagger last week. If you are just failing at Genji or dying to Braxis Zerg waves, you may want to take a look at that particular video and learn some new mechanics.
Nice. I dig. Okay. Folks, I'm on Twitter @GarrettArt, and everything I do is over at amove.tv. Go check it out. I would recommend going and subscribing wherever you grab your podcasts over to Embrace the Spoilers. Because as soon as I'm back from my vacation, Jocelyn and I will be firing that up and spoiling the latest season of Game of Thrones, some of the final movies of summer, and the original Indiana Jones trilogy, which Jocelyn has never seen. So I'm really excited for that little bit as well. So go subscribe to it, Embrace the Spoilers, wherever podcasts can be found. That's going to do it for this episode of Into the Nexus. Have a great week, everybody, while I'm gone on my family vacation. I'll see you in 2 weeks' time, but Kyle and Jeff will be here next week holding it down. And until then, good luck and have fun.
Take care.